Welcome to another episode of Hooked on Score. I'm your host, Rick Urban, and with me today we have composer Stefan Gregory. Stefan recently scored the film The Dig, which is available streaming on Netflix as we speak. This film stars Ralph Fiennes, Carey Mulligan, Lily James, by the way, who was amazing for me in this film. When she appeared on screen, she really takes the film over. But the score was done by Stefan, and Stefan is here talking to us today. Stefan is in Australia. How are you doing out there?
Hi, Rick. I'm doing great. Thank you. Doing just great.
Tell us about this film. First of all, would you mind setting it up a little bit as far as the story? I love to get the composer's perspective on what story they are telling with this film.
Well, you put me on the spot there. for me to describe the plot to a film. It's actually, funnily enough, it's a difficult film to describe. I mean, the plot is straightforward in many ways. Mrs. Pretty has these unusual earth mounds in her backyard that she thinks must have archaeological significance, and she gets an amateur archaeologist to dig them up for her, thinking that they might have something interesting inside. And it's at the cusp of World War II, and so England's about to go to war, and so it's a strange time. And what they uncover basically in these mounds is one of the most incredible archaeological finds in the history of Britain. And it turns out to be much, much older than they thought, and it turns out to be these, this is a spoiler, I guess, but I think it's a lot of people know this going into the film.
It's been out for a while now. I think you can...
I think we can talk about
it. And obviously, it's called The Dig, so they're going to dig up something dig eventually. Up something.
So it's and what they end up digging up is a site that's now known as Sutton Hoo, and we're still not really sure about who it was that was buried there, but it's sort of theorized that it's a Viking king. And on the surface, it's about that. It's about digging up treasure, and it's about the excitement of that. But the real story that sort of flows through it is a lot subtler and is more philosophical, and it's about our connection to the past and our connection to other people, and the sort of, the echoes of multiculturalism and boat people coming to England at a time where people are about to send boats off to invade Europe and it's about death and connection, I guess. So it was very interesting.
Yeah, they do a really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do a really nice job of blending the characters in with this overall arcing storyline of, the premise of the film, The Dig. But, like all stories, it's about the characters and their interactions involved in there. And there are several things kind of happening throughout the film as far as the relationships between Ralph Fiennes and Carey Mulligan and the sort of the gruff he comes in and the interaction with him and the child and everything like that. There's a lot to score here, and you've done a really nice job of bringing out the humanity in these characters. I think that's what I hear most when I hear this score. Can you talk a little bit about the instrumentation that you chose for it and things like that? There's a lot of strings and piano. It's almost a traditional film score in that regard.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the humanity, because that was one of the things that unlocked it for me, actually. Right from the beginning, we were talking about using orchestral music of the period, or using that as an inspiration for what the score might be. And so we had always talked about this traditional instrumentation, but we did at points experiment with much more radical ways to score the film. But we came back to this. And actually, I resisted using piano for a long time because it seemed like such an obvious choice to me, and I wanted to hold off on it. But it was foolish, because when I finally capitulated and tried some piano ideas, it really unlocked the score, actually.
It's funny. I think as composers, we often, on our desk, it's the thing often that we see
yeah.
literally in front of us. So we're like, well, that's obvious. So how about we do some tin whistle here, and then we'll put in some nay flute across the side, and then you end up playing it for the director, and it ends up being piano, and it works brilliantly for some reason.
I mean, orchestral music and strings and piano work really differently in films, the way they sort of, the story they tell and how they interact with the voices. And I think maybe it comes down to sort of what the film needs in the end, and it's not always obvious at the start which is going to work best. I had thought that being a film that was so much about the landscape and the connection to the earth, that these sort of orchestral sounds would be really useful in being the voice of the landscape and the voice of the universe in a way, which is sort of a theme in the film. But it turned out that we really needed that intimacy and humanity, as you talk about, from the interactions between the characters, and the piano, I think, brought us that because it's very close mic'd and it's delicate and sort of thoughtful. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's not something that people that aren't composers often think about, but there are so many different details that composers try and put into, like what you just said about doing a different miking position based on the setting of the film.
Yeah.
It's something that it's so subconscious, but I think a lot of the great film scores have that in there because there's an intention behind it. And often, even if it's something, you know, it might make the score 1% better, but it could be the thing that separates it from being an average film score to a great film score. So I love when I hear those details about the different intention behind every little detail of the score. That's really great.
Yeah.
And a lot of the, I know we've been talking about it being sort of a traditional instrumentation, but the sound is quite modern of what you do with the instruments. Did you start off with a thematic process as far as writing different themes, or how did you approach writing the score?
Well, how did we start? I generated a lot of material, and as I was talking about earlier, the starting point was orchestral music of the period, and so I generated a lot in that vein that wasn't really right in the end when it came to the looking at the first edit and putting it to it. It was sort of missing something. But then I think a lot of that early work influenced the final result. But it became clear in the process that, not surprisingly, that the film needed score as opposed to concert music, which I've been aware of all along, I guess. So I was referencing concert music from the period, which functions and has a really different structure and sound to film music, or, you know, like even opera accompaniment or something, which is about storytelling. And so I'd sort of tried to stretch that into more of a storytelling form.
I've never heard that term, concept music.
Oh, sorry, concert music is what I'm trying to say. Concert.
Oh, concert music.
You know,
sorry.
What I mean? Like, I just mean.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I just mean music written for the concert hall to be performed by itself, as opposed to music written to score a film. Because film music has a really different structure, because it's trying to tell a story and it's trying not to get in the way too much, and it really has a specific set of criteria that it needs to fulfill to work. It was just an evolution of trial and error and to find what worked. And as I was saying, the piano really unlocked it. And it's interesting you talk about it being sounding contemporary, because not everyone has said that, but I completely agree. I think it is quite a contemporary score, actually. I think it's really of the era now. As much as it does, is still sympathetic to the time and still sympathetic to the sort of more traditional aspects of the film. But even the editing and the camera work is very contemporary. And so I felt like the music had to match that in some way. The storytelling techniques that we were using to make the film were contemporary. So the music shouldn't be just period music.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for those of you that haven't seen it yet, it's set right before World War II. And it's beautifully shot film. Just the entire estate that she's on and everything like that. And when they actually do start the dig, it's really kind of overwhelming. I can't imagine being on that set, building all that and whatnot. Yeah. But I think it's always difficult for a composer whenever they see this sweeping sort of fields. It's so, you know, it's almost like a cliche to put music behind that. Yeah. You know, you have to kind of fight hard to keep it from making yourself roll your eyes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, maybe that's true. You have to be withheld. At the same time, I think it's a real gift to be given beautiful scenery or beautiful cinematography in general to work with, because it makes your work sound better. I think people appreciate the film as a whole, and if they're looking at something beautiful, they hear something beautiful, it works together. It's symbiotic, so it's a gift as well.
So how did this film come about? This is kind of your big breakout film. How did you meet the director and everything like that?
Well, I've been working with the director for more than a decade in theatre, and so in a way this is his moment of crossing over into this world as well. It's his second feature film, but it's my first. And because we had this long working relationship and we understand each other very well, he wanted to bring me on, and that's why. I mean, it helps to have a long relationship with a director.
Yeah, you said you were working in theater?
Yeah, that's right. That's where I make most of my work and money at the moment.
Is this like musicals type of theater or actual plays?
No, actual plays and writing music for those.
Wow. Yeah. That's funny. I was talking with another composer about that. When you're doing that, well, obviously it's kind of shut down now, but you said that was your kind of primary vehicle for writing music for many years. So I guess there's more of that out there than I think there is there?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it is more of a niche market. There's possibly more more work in and film and TV, but, yeah, I've been lucky enough to be doing that for more than a decade, and it's really fun. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's a similar job, and it's the same job in a way, but some of the details are different, and it's a little lower budget in terms of your production budgets and recordings and things, and it's a lot faster turnaround, so you generally have to write and record and make all the music within a week or two, really, for a whole play, And it can be quite challenging because it's not like a film where it gets written, then it gets shot, and then it gets edited, and then the music comes, and there's overlaps in those periods, obviously. But with theatre, often it's all happening at the same time. And particularly on some of the projects I work on, the script is being written as the actors are rehearsing it, as the set is being changed, and then so it can be a matter of days where you've written half the score, but the script isn't even finished on the piece. And so you're really, it all comes together very quickly, and it's very fun, but it's sort of high pressure and
yeah, I would think it would be just the opposite. I thought you would, because with rehearsals and everything like that, I thought it would have more time than a film, but it sounds like you have a lot less. And as far as the music that you actually write for it, obviously it's different every night. So as far as the pacing of it, is it mainly music set up in between scenes and at the beginning and at the end, or is there actual music being played often under dialogue?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's all those things. It's all those things. But what you said about it being different every night is a really important factor in writing the music, because your music has to be more flexible or adaptable, or it has to be able to accommodate those shifts in tempo and dynamic of a different night, or it might even be that there's a different actor playing a role one night, you know, if there's an understudy. I mean, that's less common, but so whereas with film, the precision with the timing is so important. You know, you have to, that note has to hit exactly when that edit is, or exactly when that lady puts the apple on the table. And whereas you can never achieve that in theatre, except maybe in passing in a particular moment, but in general, the music you write has to accommodate the give and take of time and everything. So in its detail, there are some significant differences in the way that you write, but 90% of the job is the same in that you're scoring a story and your music is subservient to a greater aim of the project, you know, which is to tell this story.
Wow. I actually hear a lot of that at the end of this film. There is kind of like a, I don't want to say a montage, but time passes at the end of this film, and the music, it kind of connects everything in a very nice way. And then, oh God, I have to mention this to you. I went back, I saw this movie probably right when it came out. And so today I wanted to listen to the closing credits, just to kind of refresh myself with the score a little bit. And I'm watching it and I'm listening to it and I can't get the credits to go on Netflix. It keeps going on to an ad for another movie.
Really? That's really funny. You can't watch the credits.
So I'm like, no, I want to watch the credits. And like, oh, here comes an ad for Training Day. And I was like, no, I've seen Training Day. I don't care. I want to listen to the music. So Netflix, I thought they fixed this. But Netflix, let us watch the credits, please. We want to hear this amazing music. And
I think I've.
But right before the credits start to roll, it's a really nice. The music, it just feels like the story is ending in such a nice way, and I really like the way that you connected everything in the end of this film. So bravo there,
thanks.
For sure. So I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of how you got started. I know you said you're in Australia right now. Did you grow up there or where did you grow up?
Yeah, I was born here. I grew up just out of Sydney in quite an unusual way. We didn't have electricity and we were living in the bush. So it
really?
Wasn't very far from Sydney, but it was quite isolated. Until I was about 14 or 15. I studied mathematics at uni. I didn't study music. I studied music a little bit later. Sorry, I did go to the conservatorium, but I started in a very different way, and I made my way into the art scene just through meeting people at university, I guess. And I worked as a computer programmer and as a sort of mathematician for many years. But I always had a deep creative vein and I wanted to write music. And so I found an opportunity with people I knew who were putting on plays, and I somehow got myself a gig doing that. So actually, yeah.
Is the theater scene very big in Sydney?
No, it's moderate. It's a moderate size. It's not as big as it is in Europe. And I've been doing a lot more work in Europe recently. And really the way that theater works there is, quite different. There's a lot more money in it and there's a lot more state funding of it, and so it's a lot easier to make theatre there. There's a lot more money and there's a lot more status to it. But I played in rock bands and jazz bands and stuff as well early on, and so I had a lot of experiences in being a musician, but not as a composer, although I was writing, but not as a composer for story, you know.
Yeah, more of a songwriting type of thing.
Yeah, songwriting stuff like and you know, mm-hmm. instrumental music and, yeah.
Wow. So how did you, when you began to write for theater, did you have eyes on eventually writing for film, or is this something that sort of evolved as your relationship with the director did?
I think you always have eyes on that, not as the be-all and end-all, but I think when you're writing for theatre, you think, oh yeah, I'll get to do some film one day. But actually, it took a lot longer than I thought to make that crossover. The industries are more separate than I realised, actually. But that was fine because I loved working in theatre and I then became very good at doing that job, and it has a lot of unique the skills required of it, I should say, in theatre. And so, you know, I sort of became an expert in that. I would have liked to have been doing film more, but I still love doing theatre and I'll continue to do that. So.
Have you done any musical type stuff or just straight plays?
I've written a musical. I've written a play that turned into a musical partway through. So I've done some songwriting and all that sort of stuff. You really have to, you don't have to, but I like the genre shifting aspect of working in theatre, where you could be asked to do really anything, and you often get pulled onto a project and it's not clear sometimes what that project is going to need musically. And so you have to adapt and write a jazz score, or you have to write a dramatic score, or sometimes I work with electric guitars because of my rock and roll background, which I love. And so I love that. So it keeps me stimulated, you know, I don't get bored doing the same thing. But more recently, I've just been doing a lot of work with notes on paper, you know, writing scores and having classical musicians play them. And I get a huge amount of satisfaction out of that, because it becomes a sort of collaboration with those players to some extent. And just that sense of writing something which is bigger than what you are, you know.
Yeah, it's such a funny thing when you think about it as composers. I mean, there's often an entire project is completed and a musician doesn't play any of your music. You know, I mean, there are many films that get done completely in the box.
Yeah.
And there are many, especially new composers, especially if they're, you know, of the age where they've had a MacBook their entire life that had every sound they've ever needed.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many young composers talking about, you know, working with preparing for a scoring session and not having a clue how to produce a part, or I've never played in an ensemble before. I mean, myself, I've got a big background in playing in orchestras,
yeah.
So I know how everything's supposed to look, but it's such a weird experience watching a composer sort of be in the room with musicians for the first time and being like, oh my God, look at this is what it's all about here.
Yeah.
So did you, as far as the recording of this, did you guys get to record? Was this all done before pandemic shut everything down?
We recorded it. It's real musicians playing it, but it was done in an unusual way. I mean, just on that thing about using real musicians, that's something I've always strived to do, to use real musicians. And as much as a philosophical thing, it's also about sound. I think you get something from a real player which you can't get in sample libraries, even though there's fantastic sample libraries now which build nuance and build idiosyncrasy into their sounds, and it's, thank goodness for those too. But at the same time, you don't want that same idiosyncrasy that everybody's using because they've got the same sample library. And also, you know, the idiosyncrasy that you want, that you can get from a player, is your own, you know, and you want that. And so I've always strived to use real players where you can. And it was very important to me on this film. And thank goodness, despite the difficulties of the situation, Netflix were sympathetic to this score being recorded. When they heard the demos, we thought it was very important to record it properly. Maybe because the demos weren't good enough, I don't know. But no, I think they heard it and they thought this needs to be, you know, properly recorded. And the challenge was, you know, post-production coincided with the beginning of lockdowns, really. And there was no orchestras working in the world right at the time we needed to record. It was one of the worst times. And the first place to open up was Iceland. And we, luckily my music producer had a contact there and had a really good studio that he'd worked at before that he knew. And we used this great orchestra called Symphonia Nord and was really happy with the string sounds we got from them. And we had to record the high strings and the low strings separately because of COVID restrictions, and everybody was spaced out a lot more. I mean, I think this is pretty standard practice now, but at the time we were sort of one of the first people to be doing it, I think. And interestingly enough, the spacing between the musicians led to the orchestra sounding bigger than it was, I think. And that's what the people from the studio said, because they've recorded in that room many times, that despite the fact that there was 20 players in the violins or something, that they sounded bigger than that because of the spacing, because they activated the room more, which was interesting.
Huh.
So
you had
sort of a pleasant surprise.
Built in, you kind of have a new reverb style built in with having these players spaced out.
I mean, I think it makes it harder for them to play, and we're fortunate that a lot of it was pretty straightforward playing. I think if it had been more intricate, it might have been harder for them to time it, you know, with a slightly bigger spacing. I'm not sure. But then all the wins were done individually. They were done in London in people's home studios and with different microphones and different spaces and just done as dry as possible. And we had to bring it all together and mix it together and make it sound coherent. And that was quite a challenge. And actually, I brought some of my experience at doing very low budget theatre productions where I've done that sort of thing quite a lot. And I had a couple of ideas of how we could do that. But it was quite challenging bringing all those elements together. And, you know, for me, I was disappointing at first because, you know, of course, we had Abbey Road booked to do a great orchestral session. And then, it's a bit disappointing that doesn't work out. But you know, it was kind of a miracle that we managed to make it work at all. And I was just so thankful that we could actually record it and we weren't forced to use just sample libraries given the circumstances. So,
yeah, no, and of the pieces, the scores that I've heard that have been filmed or have been recorded in this new normal way of recording of everybody being separate, this one sounds very cohesive. So whoever mixed it did a really nice job of putting everything together because, it's hard to, you can tell that they're at least in the same room. they're not in different apartment buildings across Manhattan or something like that recording.
Yeah, well, there's a few tricks to do that. But yeah, it is a challenge, especially as, you know, my music producer he wasn't used to that. You know, he's used to having a fantastic recording come in from a venue and he just has to make it sound good. But like, it's just an incredible challenge to then try to mix in a dry instrument from someone's bedroom and then put it into that space and try to make it sound real. So, you know, we really had to work on that. It was tricky.
And going into this film, is the producers and the director, was everybody, did they realize for this film you need a live orchestra? I mean, and I guess that's, for me as a composer, that seems very obvious. Just sort of looking at the first 5 seconds of the film, even if you have it on mute, I would be thinking, yeah, you absolutely need a full orchestra to do this, and you need to record it. You can't do samples for this type. Like, as you were saying, it looks so amazing. Was that obvious to them, or did you have to convince them of that?
It was obvious to me, obviously, and obvious to the director. And so that really got us there very early. And because I also have a long relationship with this director, we were both on the same page with that. We said it to the producers early on, and there was never really a question over it. So that we were just fortunate that they were prepared to support that. And we were lucky. So yeah, I'd say they were on board from the beginning. And even when, I guess the question did come up only when COVID came and it looked like it was going to be very difficult. But even then we said we were going to hold out and try to find some way to do it. So that was really, I was so relieved and thankful that they were prepared to do that.
Was this, because this came out directly on Netflix, was this in right when everything here in the States was completely shut down, all the theaters were shut. Was this released in theaters in Australia at all?
Yeah, it was released in theaters, I think, a couple of weeks before Netflix, the Netflix drop. And I went to see it at the theater here because, you know, at the time, we're in a better situation with COVID, so that was possible. And I don't know if people are going to the theaters there at all in the US, but it did have a release, so I don't know. But it's a very funny time to be releasing a film in theaters. Obviously, it's, you know, it just feels so strange, and it's sort of disappointing in a way. I think it was disappointing for us in the creative team, well, everybody in the film, you know, not to have that sort of satisfaction of, you know, all being in the same place and singing it at an opening or whatever, and just people singing at the cinemas. But it was nice that people in Australia got to see it, and there was people, my friends got to see it at the cinemas here, which was really great.
Yeah, and I mean, and you at and least got to see it, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's, because there's so, you know, I imagine there's a lot of composers this year where the, you know, that they never even get to see a large film. Okay if you're doing an independent feature or something and it doesn't get a theater release, but this is, you know, name talent, you know, A-listers. You want to see this in a film, in a theater. So at least you got to see that.
I was so thankful.
Are theaters both movie and theatrical plays? Are they happening right now in Australia?
Yeah, they both are. The theaters have opened up again. Like the theatrical theaters have opened up again, and I'm now working on a theater production actually. But it's, you know, it's a funny thing. It's not quite clear, and I'm not sure what the audiences are like. But they're reasonably strong, but I'm not sure they're at their same level as before COVID, even though right now in Sydney there's no COVID here and hasn't been for a significant time. But there's still that sort of feeling because of the world, and there's still that threat of it, and we have had it come back a few times. So yeah, it's not quite the same still, but it's I hope at least we're still in such a fortunate position, and I hope that gives some hope to other people who may be in a more difficult place right now.
And did you enjoy scoring film more than theater, or just completely different animals?
Look, I loved it. I mean, I love writing for theater as well. I mean, each project is different, you know. I loved working on this film. And the thing about it being film as opposed to theater, which was unique for me and really satisfying, was that you have this permanent record of it. People can watch this on Netflix for however long Netflix is around, presumably, and which should, you know, hopefully be decades. And whereas my
theater, pretty soon there won't be anything around but Netflix.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, in the theater productions I work on are ephemeral, and I've worked on some great things, but they're gone now, and they're only in people's memories. And there's a sense that as a theater composer, you don't really exist because you don't have anything permanently out there. And I've now realized the great benefit of having something which people can go and see, and it's from anywhere around the world, and it's put me on the map a bit. And it's just so satisfying to have a product. So I now want to, you know, do an album and do more film because I've loved it.
Yeah. And as I said, I watched the film and heard the music there, but is there a soundtrack album? Is that going to happen, or has that already been released?
No, Netflix haven't been that enthusiastic about releasing it. I think it's not really their thing to do that, although they do release some soundtracks, but there was some really great interest from some really great record labels, but it just didn't happen, unfortunately, and it's a bit late now. But I'm still trying to find a way to release it. It's a bit complex as well, the way... with the way Netflix buy you out a lot more in their contract, and so they have a lot more power over the score than I do. So I've sort of got to negotiate to find a way to release it, unfortunately. But so from my point of view, I'd love to start emailing.
Yeah. We'll start emailing and tweeting to Netflix to
please do.
To release please the do. Score for The Dig, because we want to be able to listen to this.
Yeah.
So, you said you have a theater project coming up. Any other projects that you are able to talk about here coming up?
What can I talk about? There's some film prospects on the horizon, but there's nothing. I can't talk about anything yet. I'm working on an opera.
That's why I always put the disclaimer on it. I was like, yeah, I know. Make sure you think. Is there an NDA involved? What can you talk about?
It's also, I haven't signed on either, so I might get kicked off. But I'm working on an opera at the moment for the Queensland Opera, which is quite radical. It's called Gilda, and it's a reworking of Rigoletto from the character of Gilda's perspective, and it's a complete remix and remake of the music and story, which is quite a fun and unique and interesting project. Very different to film. It's opera.
Yeah.
And I'm doing some theatre work, and there's a few theatre projects coming up, but I'm working on a solo album, which I hope to have out within the next few months. So,
wow, you definitely have, I think most film composers have... are juggling plates, but it sounds like you're juggling a lot of plates. So, and I think it shows in your music. Yeah, I think it shows kind of your versatility in your music. So,
oh, thanks.
Yeah, Really enjoyed this film, and particularly the music. Like I said, I think it captured everything it needed with the humanity of the players, as well as the, like I said, to me, it's a very modern take on a classical score. So again, I really enjoyed the music, and bravo.
Thank you, Rick.
And I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
No, thank you. Thanks for listening. Stay safe.
All right. Well, again, the film is The Dig. It's been on Netflix. Stefan Gregory is the composer. And I want to remind our listeners to check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/hookedonscore. You can get some bonus episodes there. Well, again, the film is The Dig on Netflix. Check it out. Thank you, Stefan, so much for being with us.
Thank you, Rick.
And we will see you next week on another episode of Hooked on Score.
Everyone, that's our show. Bye.